Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast, and it is our only show this week, so we've got a couple of people here. Bree's here, Aki's here, Purnell's here, Chris is here. How is everybody doing?
I always look forward to the awkward silence when we've just been, like, talking up a storm, and then you hit record.
Yeah. Everyone's like, I have nothing to say now.
Enjoy the silence.
Are we just going to talk in song titles tonight?
No. I wouldn't be able to talk then, so no. No, God, no. I am not as musically adept as you fuckers.
Well, I mean, any way you want it.
You son of a bitch.
If Purnell could manage the entire thing doing that, I would applaud him, and this would be my favorite.
I think we'd be on a highway to hell at that point.
Probably.
Or Stairway to Heaven.
Fantastic. Yeah, Stairway to Heaven, yes, 100%.
I'd be like one of those like Spotify playlists where it's just created to make sentences out of. You can do a whole review that way.
Yes,
oh my God. Perfect. Who could pull that off? Chris, you could probably pull that off.
I mean, I could, but that's so much effort.
It takes prep. That's not something you just do. You need to prepare something like that.
That would be a hard day's night.
That sounds like something I would enjoy doing.
Next game to talk about is a Spotify playlist by Bree.
I mean, the one day I wasn't. Didn't someone back when Steam Hams was at its peak, they did a whole Spotify playlist of the entire conversation? Like, you could pretty much do it with anything. It's just a matter of how much time you got.
Did you know we're on Spotify?
Yes, no, but maybe others didn't. Time to tell
them. Check us out on Spotify. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. I think we're on Amazon Podcasts. We're on YouTube. We're on Twitch. We're on Twitch right now, baby. We are live. People hanging out in chat. Thimber's here. Carnage is here. GoldenEye's here. Horror Acolyte's here. Injury's here. Chucky's here. Bunch of people here. I'm sorry if I missed anyone, but we're all here, and we've got, I don't know, a little bit of news to talk about. Did we want to dabble in the news bits since it's our only show this week? Not much. I've only got a few. The first one is that Xbox has reached an agreement with Toys for Bob for their first title. So Toys for Bob went indie and then immediately signed a deal with Xbox. I'm guessing it was part of their release agreement. Like Xbox gets first look.
Yeah.
Nifty. So it looks like there's a deal signed.
Man, I like Toys for Bob, but I'm sorry. I'm just that guy where it's like, I just want it to be a Skylanders revival. And before you go, why, I'm saying, I still think they dropped the ball on, because, you know, greedy marketers want to sell more toys. Yeah. But I felt like the true gimmick would have been to actively make multiple games that use the same toys to actively entice you to want to spend more money on games, because, well, now I got these toys, but they'll work on these games, the racing game, the dungeon crawler, whatever you want to do. They use the same toys, but instead they were like, you know, we'll just release a new Skylanders. And even though we'll say you can use the old figures, you'll never want to because they're inferior in this game.
Yeah, because now we have a shitload of new ones.
Exactly.
And variants and color variants.
Yeah, how badly do you want to bankrupt parents and non-parents?
I was bad into Skylanders too, man. Like, I had cases full of toys when I got out of that. I kind of regret getting out when I did, because the values have significantly gone up in recent years. But it's like that and Amiibo I had issues with that I just got really hooked into, and I had to fucking get all of them. I think I have addiction issues.
Skylanders. I had a was that? Benefit. I didn't pay a penny on Skylanders, but I had like all of the toys because
even
I was
though,
a
like,
nanny.
Hard to get.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I was a nanny for a reasonably well-to-do family, And I got to play Xbox while the kids did their homework and stuff. And yeah, they had all the Skylanders.
Did you take them home with you when you were done? Like, I just get Peyton Skylanders here. I ain't worried about
them. No, like, but sometimes I would bring them to my house because I had like a homestead farm kind of thing going on. And that was like extracurricular homeschooly type stuff for them. And and then, you know, I would get to like play Xbox at my house and, you know, just have the kids come play with me. We used to play Kinect games. Super fun. But yeah, I get to use all their Skylanders.
Yeah, that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. I wish I could use other people's Skylanders. I was stuck buying them myself. And that's why I'm poor.
Do you still have Skylanders? Didn't you say something on Facebook that you
every
still
single
have
one of them? Every single one.
Boxed up or loose?
Some loose, some boxed. So around the time of Superchargers, I was at that point where I was like, I'm going to get around to this game later. I'll get around to this game later. So all of my Superchargers and Imaginators are still sealed. I opened all the ones before that because I was using them. Though, and I do know that you could have played them through the box, but I was like, that's not fun. But then there's a couple special ones that I kept sealed. Like when they did the re-release of the Series 1 figures and they kind of put them in the diorama boxes, I bought like maybe two or so of those, basically my favorite ones. I bought their re-releases and kept them in the box. And it's like maybe a couple special ones, like one of like the some of the variant figures I kept in the box. But that's pretty much it. But I have the problem with that game was that I don't know what it was, but they would always release a set in installments, and whenever they got to the final figure, they would just not mass release it. I don't know what it is, but I've never found the final figure in a set at the store. So I'm missing like Robo, and I'm missing like the there's like another probably an Archer on another set, but like with the exception of the one that introduced the Light in the Dark figures, I'm missing the final Skylander of every set, and it's stupid because it's like because they're the ones that are worth the most money because it's clear that they didn't release them in mass because you can tell because they're the most valuable ones of every set.
But, I'm looking on eBay and there's just some ridiculously priced stuff. Like there's
like if you like look up Robo, like Robo? R-O-B-O-W. Yeah, he's the last one from I think Imaginators, and I was livid that I couldn't find that bastard because I was like, that sounds like a cool one. I want that, and you couldn't get it because So
Skylanders Master Robo. Lost Imaginite Minds level pack, new in box, $600.
There you go. And I'm like, loose it would have been figures. Nice if I could have got that.
Loose figures, like $450.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, collectors, man, because, again, they didn't release them fully. Like, you couldn't even find the bastard on Amazon. Like, if you were just shopping online, couldn't find it. So it's like, where do you get it? And Toys R Us was, like, the place to buy any of them, and you couldn't find it there either. It was stupid.
I think remember, you should look into pricing yours out if you're not doing anything with them. Because I know you cashed out on Rock Band, didn't you?
Yeah, I did sell my Rock Band, and I do sometimes miss that game still. But I sold Rock Band for like $700 when I sold it.
Well, if you're interested, they're coming out with a new guitar.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it's called the Riffmaster by PDP. Pre-orders already went up and sold out. They are looking to obviously do more than an initial run of the instruments, but new guitars are on the way. They're $129 for just a guitar, so it is a bit pricey.
I hope they're built $129 tough and not
from
just
the,
hey
from the early reviews and early word of mouth, they're the best guitars they've ever made.
Yeah, because I would pay for that because I still play Rock Band from time to time. But I only play like the ones I've got, which are 1 through 3. Yeah. But I still play the game. It's still fun. And I still feel like
get Rock Band 4 and I'll come visit and I'll let you borrow an instrument and we could play guitar together.
That'd be fun.
I think Rock Band 4 Rivals bundle is $20 now.
So the game itself sells for cheap. It was the band in the box that had the value.
It's gone. The instruments that have the value and specifically the drums.
Yeah, because those things went to shit fast, real fast. But God, I loved Rock Band. It held up. Like, I've been playing rhythm games since freaking Poppin' Music and Poppin' Music 2 and DDR and Beatmania 1. Yeah. And even with all that, like, Guitar Hero was like, it's fun. But we didn't peak until Rock Band. Rock Band set it afire. And I was like, wow, everyone's playing these games now. And you got freaking parties set up where people were just getting together just to play these games together. It was wonderful. And then
now it's dead for Fortnite. Thanks, Epic.
Yeah, fucking Fortnite. That damn game.
Thanks, Epic.
No, thank you.
Appreciate it. Glad you killed a game with 3,000 songs just to make people start over.
Wait, I don't remember. Epic killed it?
Yeah, they ended DLC for it.
Oh, that was okay. I didn't realize they were the reason behind that.
Because they shifted Harmonix to Fortnite Festival.
Ah,
which is basically Rock Band in Fortnite, but it's pastel. Songs are really expensive and you don't get to keep anything.
That's fucking stupid.
Because it's an online only game. So when Fortnite goes down, all the money that you've sunk into songs on there, gone. Poof. Bye.
Oh, more of that season garbage. No thanks.
Yeah. So I will not spend a single penny on Fortnite Festival. I won't even spend the hour to download the 65 gigs to try it, because I've watched enough streams of it to know that it's not what I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play Rock Band. It's pastel. It's ugly. It's Fortnite. It's just the aesthetic. I don't like the Fortnite aesthetic. And now they're forcing rhythm games that way. I don't like it. Just give us Rock Band 5.
No, thank you.
It's clear the demand is there. With these instruments selling the way they did, it's clear demand is there for a Rock Band 5.
Yeah, I'd say, quite frankly, the only reason Rock Band truly dried up was, quite frankly, because there was no access to instruments. Because, you know, I don't even feel like Rock Band, and if we're over talking this, by all means, let me know. We can move on. But I don't even feel like Rock Band got oversaturated, because a lot of times there was that era where people were saying, we got Rock Band, we got Guitar Hero, we got Rocksmith, and that other one that nobody cared about all at the Power same time. Gig. Yeah, no one talked
about Rock Revolution.
There it is. That's the one, the Konami one. Like, nobody cared Band about that, fuse. Which is sad because they were the originators of the freaking music gaming style, and they released the shittiest one. How does that happen? But I digress. People were like, yeah, this is an oversaturated market, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, it was only saturated because there were people who were trying to get all of them, when in fact, you could have just been like, well, this is the one I give a crap about. I don't care about the other ones. This is what I did. I was like, I'm sticking with Rock Band. They've proven that they got what it takes to make it stick.
The thing is, it was oversaturated. There were too many releases. There were too many
releases. Well, that's the thing. Too many releases of Rock Band or rhythm games.
Everything, because both Guitar Hero specifically, how many Guitar Heroes were they cranking out?
Yeah, but that's
plus
what I'm
band spin-offs plus smash hits.
Yeah, but that's
Guitar
what I'm
Hero
saying.
Ran like, it into the ground.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, when I looked at that, I said, all I care about is Rock Band. All those other games, they're dead to me, because what generally happens is if a bunch of wannabes, I don't really want to call Guitar Hero a wannabe, but the point is, when a bunch of other companies want to capitalize on something that was made great by one other company or two other companies, at that point, a consumer has to ask themselves, do you want to stretch yourself thin, or do you want to stick with the one that's been, you know, giving you fun up until this point? And for me, it was, I'm sticking with Rock Band. When I get a Rock Band release, I'm going to buy it. And otherwise, these other guys can rot. And if other people did a similar thing, what would have happened is those other games would have died, but Rock Band would have kept going because they would have continued to sell. So for me, it's like the genre was oversaturated, but I'm generally good at just saying I'm going to buy the one that's sticking with me, the one that's working.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I guess other
that's
people
why I
didn't.
Stuck with Rock Band. People are like, I hope they bring Guitar Hero back. I don't, because I want to start over.
And then the last game they did was freaking terrible. Was that freaking like you got to buy the online catalog or the TV network or whatever?
And that's gone now. You can't even play the online anymore. So all that's available on Guitar Hero Live is that 45 disc or 45 song on disc set list. Thimber with a couple of questions. Is the reason why there's no more Rock Band is because music licensing is getting too expensive. If that were the issue, they wouldn't be releasing as many songs in Fortnite festivals they are. It's not a music licensing thing. It's Epic wanting to focus on Fortnite over Rock Band. And I guess forcing people to start over with a fresh library ensures that people buy new songs or repeats of stuff they already owned. And the prices are significantly higher in Fortnite Festival. The cheapest,
give me an example.
The cheap, like if you buy V-Bucks in the cheapest pack, the average song price someone figured out is $3.33. That's if you buy it in the most expensive V-Bucks bundle. I think so. I think someone said they're $5 or $6 a song in V-Bucks. I haven't fired it up. Again, I have not played it. I have no interest in playing it. I don't know the exact price myself, but it's more than double what they are in Rock Band, which I can understand needing more money for songs. They've been $2 since the beginning. I can understand $3 a song, but like $5 a song? No, thank you. Not interested. Horak Light says 500 V-Bucks a song. There you go.
And a 100 V-Bucks is a buck, basically?
I guess so.
And then keep
it. $5 a song. No, thank you. And you don't keep them when the game dies.
And that's the biggest slap in the face. It's like you're basically buying temporary entertainment, which, of course, is that's what a lot of companies generally want, because if it's not permanent, they can sell it to you again or keep you on the hook for wanting new entertainment. So,
and then asking if Rock Band and Guitar Hero are made by the same people. Kind of. Harmonix developed the original Guitar Hero games. And then when they were split up, when EA bought Harmonix and Activision bought Red Octane, Activision kept the rights to Guitar Hero and EA started Rock Band. EA and MTV Games started Rock Band.
The period when they officially split was at Guitar Hero 3 and Rock Band 1.
Yes.
And one of the ways a lot of people were doing comparisons.
Guitar Hero 3 was made by Neversoft.
Mm-hmm. And like there were a couple songs that were in both games, so immediately people were playing the game, the tracks in both games to compare the note charts and all that stuff. Those were the days. And at that point, I was like, yeah, Rock Band is by far the better. This is much better. But then people were like, yeah, but Guitar Hero has the boss battles. Like, it's a music game. I don't care about bosses. I just want to play a track.
Yeah.
So,
anyway, some other news. Braid Anniversary Edition is set to contain 35 new levels.
Ooh.
So a lot of new gameplay in that.
Hmm.
I can pull what little hair I got left out of my head.
Yeah.
I want to know who found those stars in the original game.
I didn't find every star, but I found a few.
Like the one where you have to wait how many, was it like hours for a cloud to move the one area?
I mean, the internet was around back then, so.
But like, who was the first person to figure that out? Like, that cloud's moving.
I don't know about back then, but I know nowadays folks just disassemble games and then look for stuff. Like, there's not really any trial and error anymore. They're just like, well, here's a game. Let's immediately pull it apart in day one. Yeah, data mine. So, like, yeah, any cheats that are out. It's the one that's fun to me is the cheats that people forget about, that they knew about back then, but are just now rediscovering. Like, that you can be on foot in Star Fox 64.
I don't remember that, but then again, I'm not sure if I ever knew that now I think about it.
Yeah, it's like you have to get like every single medal in the game. It's like,
oh, geez.
Basically you have to do like everything in the game, and then it unlocks a mode where you can just run around and your characters have like bazookas and stuff. They covered it in EGM back in the day, and folks just kind of forgot about it because, well, you know, Star Fox 64 is kind of hard.
Yeah, it is, but I love that game. I didn't like the original Star Fox, but I loved that one.
Yeah, but it eventually, like, I just saw today that it's kind of re-entered the conversation in retro circles, and, like, folks are digging up YouTube videos of people doing it and stuff, and they're like, oh, I thought it was all barrel rolls.
It was a few barrel rolls, a few.
Anyway, last bit of news I have, because it's a short week, people are buzzing that Final Fantasy 16 may now have a future on Xbox at PAX East. Producer Naoki Yoshida was asked about saying goodbye to the characters with the DLC, and he replied that it's not over in the sense that we have the PC version. Once the PC version is realized, we're thinking about hopefully moving to other platforms as well. You think that means Xbox or Switch 2? Not 16.
I think it was already on Xbox.
Nope. 16 is a PlayStation exclusive, right?
He's talking about the Bandai Wonderswan D-make.
Oh, yeah.
That they're planning on.
God damn it. Wonderswan. So, Aki, what are your thoughts? Do you think 16 might be on the way to Xbox? Are you excited?
I would like to believe that, but I believe in Square's incompetency. So, no, I don't think it's going to Xbox.
I mean, we got 14. 14's finally here. 14 is released on Xbox. It is out. You could get a starter pack if you're a Game Pass Ultimate member that gets you a free month, but I would just do the free trial instead. Because once
Which
you do that
so much longer?
Yeah, once you do that free month, you're locked into having to subscribe to keep playing. If you do the free trial, you could play that shit free as long as you want until content caps out.
Yep.
Like there's a lot of content in that free trial that you should.
And then I believe you can then get that 1 month trial afterwards even.
I don't know how long that trial is going to be there. And then the price. Oh my God, the price. They have a collection. I believe it's $69.99, maybe $59.99. That's the game, the base game and all the expansions. And then there's a complete collector's bundle that has a bunch of bonus like minions and equipment and other shit for in-game that's $140.
Jesus. Wait, what game are we talking about again?
Final Fantasy 14 on Xbox.
Oh, no wonder I was thinking 16 like a doofus.
Yeah, 16's still not on Xbox. Fingers crossed, that's what the news bit's about, but we're just jumping between 16 and 14 at will.
Okay.
And there's going to be a crossover between the games in the next couple of months, too, so it'll get even more confusing. XVI and XIV.
I never started 14, and I might not ever. As much as I love Final Fantasy, I gotta stick with my single-player mentality.
Do the free trial.
No.
That's too much like work.
Augie, are you going to try it?
I might. If I do, I'll probably do it on PC.
Why?
Because I know a bunch of people who play it on PC.
It's cross-play.
I don't care. He's just making
excuses.
Yeah, if I get an achievement in the Xbox One, I will feel like I have to 100% the fucking game, and I don't want to do that. Because I already know, even if I like it, I'm not going to like it that fucking much that I want to pay like $25 a month or whatever the fuck it is for the subscription.
I think it's like 14 a month or 15 a month.
I don't want to end up paying that for like 50 fucking years as I try to finish the fucking game. Because I know that's what's going to happen. So I just want to, you know, avoid that bullshit outright, because that will be my exact issue.
You played that Gunpla demo that you shared.
No, I just learned that the demo even existed today. So I will be getting that and looking at it over the weekend, though, because Gunpla, I need it.
Is your PC up and running?
Yes, I got it technically running this weekend.
And how much porn did you run on it so far?
I've barely done anything with it because I am still trying to get through settings and stuff, but most of the stuff that I need in order for the computer to run, I've downloaded and installed and made sure it's working. There's a few things I still need to get, but overall, I'm good now. It's ready enough that I can actively play it at any time I want.
Good thing, because you just got a review game for it today.
Yes. Yes, I did.
Did you like the message? I'm like, hey, did you get your PC up yet? Hope so. Here's a code.
Yeah.
Is it the game you were anticipating, it sounds like?
I didn't expect to get it for PC, but I'm glad I got it.
I told
Does
you if we were getting
it. Does it involve a game that needs a flashlight but doesn't quite come with one?
What?
I was trying to be cryptic because I don't know if Joe wants to say it on the show, but I know of a game you were looking forward to. So I was like, is it a game that
it's not alone
you usually don't?
Didn't get that sadly. they never replied to us on that one.
No, it's Ender Magnolia. We'll be talking about that next week on the show.
Yep.
Ooh, stay tuned.
Yeah, just launched yesterday, I believe. Steam Early Access, $20.
Yeah.
Could have been Steel Magnolias. Just imagine.
So news, Aki, any news on your end?
Oh God, no. That'd be almost like I was competent. No.
Yeah, I know. One day. Bree, how about you? News.
You hit the one thing I had on my list.
What was the thing?
Yes. Toys for Bob.
Oh, Chris, any Toys news on Bob. Your end?
Nah, I mostly deal with olds.
For now, any game news you want to talk about?
I wish I had some. I spent all my time in hospitals.
I'm sorry to hear that.
No, it's okay. This is constant. It's just like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of something, but I really can't. I guess the one thing, it's not really game news, it was just like I heard apparently Kotaku had a thing where they were like, there are people that are running them saying, no more articles, pivot only to game guys. Like, that's somehow going to make money.
Like, yeah, I saw that. Didn't their editor-in-chief resign saying, like, I don't believe in doing this bullshit. Like, we're a news site. We're not a game site, like a game guide.
Oh, this is a stupid idea, and she's not wrong. And if anybody's listening to this and going, well, yeah, but Kotaku sucks, well, here's the thing. Hate clicks drive revenue, too, and they get a lot of those. So to take that away and say, start doing that thing everybody else is doing, possibly better than you. Also, your team is not really built around, you know, game guides. You're built around news articles. It's almost like saying, I'm trying to kill this site, and I'm going to mask it as a change in direction. So it was like, ugh, that's a terrible.
It is a change in direction. Plan. It's a change in direction from it being a crappy site to a non-existent site.
Yeah, but that's just it. You're not the business. You're just a person who would give them hate clicks. As a business,
I don't even give them that. That's too much effort.
But a lot of people do. That's the point. As a business, it makes sense to keep it that way or do something that will actually drive revenue. This is neither. So I don't know what they're thinking there, unless it's literally just to kill the site. But that was the thing that I saw in the news this week. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? That's like the stupidest business.
It's so hard to find a good source for news anymore.
It really is. Cause everything's a hype site now. Everything's hype. So it's like, well, whatever.
As much as I use here. Yeah. The best source for news is the SMO podcast. Honestly, they focus on the good stuff. They don't focus on the bullshit. They're just no nonsense. They have a great cast of reviewers on the show. The host is kind of shitty, but you know.
Yeah, the host is fine sometimes. One of the co-hosts really sucks, though. Thankfully, he's not on too often. And when he is, he's really late, so it doesn't really matter.
Oh, that's not nice. He's not here to defend himself this week.
All the more reason.
I'm pretty sure
that just means he's super late as far as I'm concerned.
No, he doesn't even have anything this week. He's innocent.
That sounds like a him problem.
His ears are absolutely tingling right now. He's like, someone's talking about me.
The SNL has biased pancake opinions, though. All right, Horak, let you got us. We are biased.
The L in SML stands for libel.
With that popcorn, well, that pan, the waffles. I got the waffle opinion.
Yeah, I like significantly. Pancakes
you,
are.
You were cutting out there, Rocky. Talk into the mic.
Oh, sorry. I leaned back because I was playing a game. Sorry. I said no. We don't have bad pancake opinions or biased ones, even because I like waffles. I don't particularly like pancakes at all. Period.
How do you not like a pancake? That's what always confused me. Like, there's preference, yeah, but they're largely the same ingredients between the two things. They're just prepped differently.
Yeah, one's just puffier. So you don't like pancakes at all?
No, well, they're fine. They're not. I'm not going to go out of my way for them, but I will go out of my way for a waffle. Because a waffle's good.
Waffles are good, too.
Yeah, they have syrup cups to make sure you always have plenty of syrup, whereas a pancake, it just goes off and then they get super soggy and fall apart.
My God, we agree on something for once. See,
that's why I like
soggy pancakes are good because that means it's fully drenched in syrup.
No.
That's too sugary for me.
You need to stamp this, Joe. Aki and I agree on a thing.
What are you talking about?
Oh, true, but this is something that's food related, and that's awesome. Like,
you like tacos? Yes,
I do like tacos.
Okay, so we agree on just about everything related to food, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you like onions?
Yeah, they're fine.
See, that's the biggest disagreement. But in that defense, though, I think I disagree with the world on onions, so I'm okay with that. But
onions suck.
Yeah, but like,
fuck onions.
Yeah, fuck onions.
I mean, they're good on tacos, they're good on burgers, and if prepared right, they're good on pizza, too. Other than that, I don't really want onions on anything.
I don't like onions on my pizza, but I love onions. They just don't belong on my pizza.
I think onion pizza is great.
At least you dislike onions in that place. I'll take what I can get. Onions are gross.
Yeah. Like, other than those places, I don't like them unless it's like a bloomin' onion. And even then, that's just a barely thing.
I prefer Outback fries. I can't do bloomin' onions. I hate onions. Oh, they're just nasty. onions are just gross to me.
I mean, I get that they're just coming into their own at that point, but I still don't like them.
No, give me the Outback fries when I go to Outback.
Like Aki gosh, sort of laughing.
I'll eat fries, but I'm not a big fan of fries.
I love fries, specifically orange fries. If they're not orange, they're just mediocre at best.
Orange fries?
Yeah.
Fries
Rallies,
are fries. Yeah, the
Arby's.
Season fries.
Oh, season. Yeah. Yeah.
I just call them orange fries.
Orange fries is more accurate. I'm agreeing here.
Yeah, oh, I guess technically when those are Rallies and Checkers, they're not even seasoned. They're like, they're battered fries.
Yeah, and those are excellent, by the way.
Oh, yeah, Rally's fries are the best fries on the planet.
I also call them Coke fries.
We don't have those stores here in Texas, but I mean, we have those fries, and they're good.
Yes, about Foodcast. Yeah,
dude, food is like food and Gunpla. That's like my two things, yo. Everything SML should is kind of irrelevant to me.
Which SML should be a food podcast. It says smell right there.
and a large portion of our cast are overweight, so many of us clearly like food.
I am
all the more reason.
I'm a foodie.
There we go. Even the ones of us who aren't huge are still foodies. There we go. We should be doing food. What are we doing with video games? What the fuck?
You weird thin people.
Yeah, fuck you, skinny bitches.
Well, fine. In that case, I'm putting you all on the mission. If you can find those Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity potato chips, please help me out.
Rudy?
I want to try
Wait,
them.
What?
Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity potato chips.
I will find you a place to get them before the podcast is over.
Because me want you. I heard about them. I want to try them. And
I've never heard of them. I just know I can find them.
I also want to try Berry Pebbles, and I can't find those any damn where either.
They're IHOP IHOP Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity Pancake Chips from Lay's. That is weird.
That's why I like them. I like the weird chips. Like
the very Walmart exclusive. There you go.
Oh. That explains why I haven't found them. God damn it. Now I gotta find a Walmart that also happens to be carrying them at the time. And
I found them on eBay. They're expensive as shit on eBay.
Jeez.
No,
yeah, they're like $27 for like two bags.
Get back and trade a Skylander for some. Yeah, I got this. I don't know. I got the Stealth Elf right here. If you're interested in making a swap,
apparently my Walmart has
Skylanders for food.
Parnell, you want me to tell Ashley to stop at Walmart in the morning and check if they have them?
Oh, I'd appreciate that for sure, yeah, because I want those chips so badly. It's
the
like
Momcast.
Yes, I'm the guy that likes all the weird flavored things. Gimme.
That's $9 a bag. Holy shit, those are expensive fuckers.
No, they're $3.
Are you talking about the normal price, the MSRP?
Yeah, they're $3 at Walmart. Pick up tomorrow, delivery tomorrow.
MSRP, they should be normal price. Like,
weird. At my Walmart, they're $9.
Very weird. Price
gouging.
What
size bag is yours?
7 3/4 ounces.
And what the hell? Why is it so expensive here? What the fuck?
Maybe it's on sale in my area.
Is it a third-party vendor or something?
Ooh, maybe.
No, I have no idea.
Looks like Walmart's are $3 for me.
Lays are all over the place for me. Most of them are around $5.50 for me.
Shit's banana.
No, it's strawberry.
N-A-S.
No, it's strawberry.
And what was the other thing you wanted? The berry what?
Berry pebbles. It's fruity pebbles for Women's Month.
Okay.
India's Magic Masala Lay's chips.
God, I would eat that. That's a thing?
Yeah.
Wow, I found these on eBay too. They're so expensive.
I'm guessing those are not in the United States, though.
The masala, the Lay's ones, masala. Yeah, you could get them off Walmart. Those are expensive because that's a third party vendor. But
yeah,
Walmart's just like Walmart's like any other kind of like e-commerce site. It's just you can get anything there.
You got to go to retailer and specifically pick Walmart to see what they've got.
Oh boy.
Anyway, we've talked a lot about food. Should we talk about games? We got 6 games to talk about tonight. Should we dive into these?
Yeah.
I hope the first game has a cooking mini game in it.
I think so. Yeah. First game to talk about tonight is Iconi Island, an Earthlock adventure developed by Snowcastle Games, published by Jetpack Collective and the Iterative Collective. Release March 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5 for $24.99. Iconi Island is yours to discover, explore and gather resources, farm the land, craft tools and gear, and build your base or cozy home. Befriend magical creatures and fight monsters with your friends or solo. Aki, what is going on in Iconi Island, an Earthlock adventure?
Okay, in this, you are one of four kids who get into a storm while sailing the sea, and you crash on an unknown island. You are cold, in the rain, at night, alone, and there are pirates and monsters about ready to eat your face, or something. So a ghost appears, and instead of pissing yourself and passing out, you're like, cool! And you talk to it, and they convince you to go and help them restore shrines on this island to batter away the dark and bring light back to it. And that requires you to basically farm resources to give to these altars that automatically repair things for you, so you don't have to fix things. You just have to get the material goods for it. Woot. If only real life was like that. That'd be so much cheaper to build everything. So the shrines, all they do is allow a day and night cycle. At night, beasts and stuff will appear more frequently, and they'll actually go out of their way to kill the shit out of you. Whereas during the day, everything's a lot safer and nice, and you don't hate your life as much. And yeah, so you go around, you hit trees with, you know, axes, swords, whatever, to get some resources from them until you can find a beast that will cut them down for you. That is just a giant chicken with an axe for a face, which is fantastic. And you can get, you know, leaves, fruits, what have you from stuff, and you use things like that to feed your new pets that you find throughout this island. In order to make them happy, you also give them attention by petting them. So yes, you can pet the dog. It takes a long time to get the dog, but you can pet the dog. You can also pet the cat when you get the aquatic cat thing.
Yay.
Yeah, I figured you'd like that. And yeah, so you do that, and you also water them occasionally. I don't know if they're drinking the water or you're just washing them off. I have no idea. But doing all three of these things increases meters on the pet, and over time, those meters will start to drop down, obviously, because, you know, they're doing stuff for you. Whether, you know, the cat, aquatic cat thing is going in and getting you fishes, or the bird slamming its head into stuff to cut down trees and overgrown spots of land or what have you, they slowly lose some of these things. So you top them back off with all three of them, and that raises a little bar next to them. And once it gets to the top, you can evolve them to their next form, which is just a slightly different version of their current form. For the bird, it changes color. that's it. And this gives them more energy to hit things that they couldn't damage before, because certain items, after you hit them a certain amount of times, they're like, now it can only be damaged by something that requires a higher version of this item, be it an item in your inventory or a level up for your creature. With this, your animals will unlock new pathways so you can get to other shrines on the island. They will help you get resources, obviously, be it the giant ram that slams into every pile of anything, be it a gigantic boulder or a pile of trash, they will ram into it and give you resources. It's pretty fantastic. All the animals have a few level ups that they can do, and then they're max level, and then you don't have to care about their stats anymore. And you can just let them starve and smell bad and be unhappy, and it doesn't matter if you want to be a piece of shit anyways. And yeah, so you're going throughout there fixing all of these and fixing other things. You can fix buildings and pathways so you have a straighter shot to get different places. Like, there's bridges that are broke, you need to repair those so you can cross them and get to the other fucking side, kind of like the chicken. And so you can access new areas. There's also stairways that you can fix just to get a straighter shot. between two areas, so on and so forth. Occasionally, you do come across enemies, and it's really, you get a couple weapons in the game. You eventually get to the point where you can make a lot of these weapons, not all of them, but a good chunk of them. And you just tap X to whack them and hope that they don't whack you first and take part of one of your hearts away. Because the enemies, they don't fuck around. They hurt. They hurt you a lot. They hurt you bad. And until you get some of the better weapons, you are really pushing to hurt them barely at all, which is a shame. I think they need to balance that a little bit, but otherwise the combat's fine. This game is not, its focus isn't the combat. It's more just being chill and relaxing and exploring the island. So that's fine. I don't particularly mind that too much. Occasionally you'll come across pirates. They have a few bases. And that is basically a stealth minigame. And if
these
enemies jump from side to side, like they'll face forward and then they'll jump and be turned around 180 degrees and be looking the opposite way, so on and so forth. And you just have to bypass all their vision lines to aim a cannon at where the boss is and shoot them enough times that they decide, okay, we're giving up on this place, and they leave, basically.
Yeah, well, I have to bypass your review for a second to thank BX Latino Heat for the sub. 16th month. Thank you so much for hanging out. Enjoy the emotes. All the kitty cats.
Over a year of wasting your money on us, I am so sorry. So, so sorry.
Yeah, but Latino Heat's won a lot of games, so it pays off.
Yeah, it does.
Gotta get them bonus entries.
Fair, very fair. And that's
much love to you, Latino Heat. Thank you as always for being here and hanging out. Always good to see you in chat. But Iconi Island, let's get back to this.
Yeah, that's actually the majority of the game right there. You're just fixing stuff, really, and gathering resources to fix more stuff. It's not much about the pirate things, because I think there's only like five bases or something like that on the entire island, and enemies, there's a bunch of them as you travel, but again, the game's not really about fighting. You can literally run past them all if you want, because they have a set distance where they will follow you, and then they just kind of stop, and you are faster than them by a significant degree. So it's a pretty good game. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and you get to choose which character you play as at any time, because whatever character you're not playing as, the other three just sit where you started the game. So you can always run up to them and give them whatever items you don't want to carry. If you don't want to, you know, make a chest or anything, you can just give them random crap to hold and be like there, or you can even switch to them whenever you want. The game isn't particularly short. It does start off pretty difficult, because in order to build some of these stronger weapons, you have to go into dangerous territories that far outclass the weapons you have, which was kind of upsetting. And some of the good weapons you can't even craft for a while, even if you get the recipe, because you haven't unlocked the area. Like, I'm able to make a stronger weapon than one of the first recipes for a weapon that I got. And I just unlocked that area like yesterday, late last night. Yeah, there are some vendors in the game. There's a guy that calls himself Frog Boy, and he wears a frog mascot helmet, basically. And they give you a box where you can sell stuff, and they give you ribbits, which is the money of this game. And you can use that to buy stuff from him, or from the spirit when you create a shop for her, or for three other characters in the game that you also have to build shops for. And basically every day they get a new list of items in, even though it doesn't seem to actually be a proper day. I don't know when it actually goes in, but it says daily, this day's selection. And sometimes it'll have just items. Usually there's a limited selection of them. So it's like, oh, you can buy a couch. Oh, you can buy a bed. Oh, a duffel bag or some other fucking decoration. or you can buy a recipe so you can build this shit yourself and you don't have to spend like 400 fucking ribbits to buy this item. Because that's a lot at first, because it's a struggle at first, because you need all them resources so you can feed your animals and build the really shitty weapons that break pretty quickly. So you need that shit. So it's like you don't have any ribbits at first. So you really need to be able to craft stuff. And later on, like at this point, I go out one quick run just wherever I'm going. I run back to the home base when I have no inventory space left, and I can get like a few thousand ribbits now. And it's like, I don't really care at this point. I'm good. Yeah. But at the beginning, it was like, I was lucky if I could get like 20 at a time. And it was like, everything costs like the next shittiest weapon costs like 200 and something, almost 300 of them. It's like, you need to just craft things if you can. Yeah. That is a much better value for you. Even at this point, it is still better because I can craft weapons that I can't get in the store unless they're there for that daily select thing. And it's like, you need a bunch of these. Like, yeah. I keep 4 weapons on me at all times because they will break.
Yay, breakable really weapons.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question about breaking. Does the game break? Is the game in good workable state? This game has had kind of a rough path on console. It was supposed to launch a couple of months ago, and then it accidentally launched on Xbox back in February. It's officially out as of March 20th or 21st. Is it in good condition? Is everything working? Is it worth picking up? What are your thoughts on everything?
It mostly works. There are some issues where, like, chests that you set down, sometimes you run up to where they're supposed to be, and they're just not. The game hasn't popped them in yet, and you may have to sit there where they're supposed to be for, you know, a minute or two, and eventually it usually spawns back in. And I think that's because the game seems to have some trouble figuring out what the fuck you've put in it, which is kind of a problem since it's the storage in the game. but that realistically is the only issue I found, other than, hey, in order to continue this game, you need to go into an area that has enemies that barely take any damage from your weapon in order to do anything, which I don't think is a glitch. I think that's just, they may have made some mistakes on where certain enemies should be. But really that's all I found. I did have one major issue, but that was fixed pretty easily. And I know exactly what caused it. I played this originally back in like, November, December, I think something like in there. Cause we had it way early.
Review a game and you get an email that's like, it's getting delayed a few months. Might want to hold off.
Yeah. So. And then we get close to that and it gets delayed again. and
we almost accidentally covered this way too early we didn't know it got delayed. So
yeah, I think you learned that morning that it got delayed actually.
Yeah. I'm like, hey,
we can't do this. And I was like,
We got to delay that for a little bit.
Yeah, I had some issues with that version of it. And when I loaded up the save that I had from that, the game completely crashed when I went from one area to another. And that's because they changed up how the island works when you get to different places in it. So the game couldn't register where I was going. So I had to actually make a brand new complete fresh save. Oh, wow. And since then I haven't had any issues. Think I've gotten further in the game now even.
Well, it clocks in at $25. What is your verdict?
100%. This is a fantastic game. You will probably like it. If you have kids, they will probably like it. It is very child friendly. It's very adult friendly. I say it's good for everybody. All ages, have fun.
Rated E10 for fantasy violence. So it looks to be aside from a little hack and slash, it looks to be good for everyone.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Good stuff.
There's no blood or anything in the game, so you don't need to worry. When things die, they just flop over and then poof out of existence. So
that's how I am when I get really tired. I just flop over and then poof out of existence.
Well, you poof, and that's about it. That's not out of existence. That's just really smelling, bad smelling gas.
Next game to talk about tonight, Retouring, developed by Malte Weiss, published by Sometimes You, released March 29th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows Store, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $9.99 each. Retouring is a first-person puzzle game in which you'll explore the abandoned Luoni Energy Competence Center. Using a retro-style computer, you'll create color patterns to progress through the levels. Bree, tell us about your time with Retouring.
So yeah, as you said, your character, I believe, is a young lady, has broken into the Luoni Energy Competency Center. That's a mouthful to say, by the way, which has been abandoned. You solve some first-person puzzles where you have to use computer logic strings on a console. Each door you need to pass through has a series of colored codes that you need to create using routines that get more complex as you go along. You might need to get all the colors the same, or you might need to get the colors into a mix of like red, blue, or yellow. Your logic sequences can go to the left or the right, or of starting, or pause in the middle and have extra rules using other routines indicated by X, Y, or Z. This all sounds really complicated and is hard to explain, but it is easier in practice, I promise you. There are also cubes, buttons, lasers, and moving platforms to use in pursuit of the exit to your puzzle as well. A simple example to try and describe what you might have to do is that on your console, all the colors might be yellow, but the door code might want it to be all red, and your cursor starts on the left. So your command string might be to print red where yellow is and aim your cursor to the right. A slightly more complicated version is you might need to do the exact same thing, but add a rule on Y, where once it completes X, it turns all red to blue headed to the left, and that way it opens two doors, the red door and the blue door. And you would have to then run through both doors as fast as you can, because once the first command is done, it will close the door because it's now shifting to the next command. As things progress, you get to do more complicated tasks that involve timing, like running through the door. You might also have to get through a door before your power runs out, or walk on moving platforms in sync before a timed button runs out. I think the game does a pretty good job of teaching you as you go along, and there's a good hint system where you can sit down to think on your rules, and it'll give you a clue or two. You can also save the strings that you need to recreate, so like where it says above the door, like yellow, red, red, yellow, blue, and you can click on that, and it brings it. It saves it to the top of your screen so you don't have to take notes, which I thought was really, really helpful. There is a limited kind of story told environmentally, mostly as you're traveling through lobbies between levels, where you'll find books and music and a display of a smartphone as a relic of the past, which I thought was amusing. And then the seemingly nuclear power company, the Luoni Energy Company, touts clean energy since 2032, so you can kind of get an idea of how far into the future we are. It is not a particularly long game. It's 26 levels, but then neither was the original Portal, which this is somewhat reminiscent of. There's even a joke at the end of the game about cake.
But was it a lie?
That's left to interpretation, I think.
Aki, it was a joke.
But yeah, overall, I had a really good time with it. And it does get challenging.
Well, it clocks in at $10. It is from Sometimes You, so it is separate purchases for our Xbox friends on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Windows Store, each having its own achievement stack. What are your thoughts on that? Is it worth picking up one version, multiple versions? What do you think?
I mean, if you like achievements, I would say once you figure out the solutions the first time, I don't know that it's going to have like a super ton of replay value to replay the second time, but it'll certainly be easy for those achievements once you played through it once. So I mean, I'd say it's a buy it for me on at least one. If you enjoy, you know, figuring out these sorts of puzzles, I thought it was a good mental exercise, and like, it's really easy up until about like level 11 or 12. And then it's like, okay, that just got complicated. But once you get past like the new like level of rules to it, it's not too hard to figure out. Just a little bit of finagling. So.
All right. Sounds good. Bree, that is it for you. Are you sticking around? Or are you heading out?
I am going to head out, and I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to head out.
You streaming tonight or no?
I am. For at least a little while. I'm losing my voice a little, apparently, because of the pollen apocalypse that's going on because of where I live.
Jesus.
Yeah, so I feel like my voice is really scratchy. So we'll see how long I last. I've been like sneezing all day and coughing, so Yeah.
Any thoughts on what you're playing? Are you going to renovate some more hotel rooms?
I finished the game 100% for achievements.
Really?
I did. But I was thinking I might go and do a tour, because last time I was streaming it, I was struggling to figure out how to add new floors. And I felt like such an idiot after I looked it up online. I'm like, oh, how did I not see that very obvious button that would allow me to add floors? So I might just do a hotel tour, like when I get in there, just as something chill to do. And I might mess around with an F&B game just so I don't have to talk as much for a little bit, and see how that goes. So, yeah.
Very cool. Well, you have yourself a wonderful stream. Do you have any final words?
Pollen sucks.
Amen.
Yeah. Have a good night, everybody.
See ya.
Have a good
evening.
Peace. Sam.
Next game to talk about is called Power of 10, developed and published by Pew Times 3. Like that name. Released March 20th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $11.99. A single starfighter trying to save as many civilians as possible before they are overrun by a destructive armada. You'll need to gather new weapons, upgrade your ship, find resources, trade with other ships, and more to overcome the challenge before you. Each run is a uniquely created journey where you'll utilize your flight skills and strategy you've built over many runs to crush the challenges ahead. Pernell, tell us about your time with Power of 10.
So Power of 10 is essentially a roguelike space shooter where you are a ship. They give you a narrative at the beginning, but it didn't quite mesh with me in a sense. It reads out as if you are sent off into space on a mission, leaving your family behind on your home world. Something takes place and you end up, I guess, sealed away or something for a very long time. And when you come out with your ship, you find yourself in a solar cluster or a solar system where there are a number of planets that are left undefended and defenseless while enemy armadas are approaching to destroy them. As the player, you go from, planet system to planet system, amassing resources, which you can acquire by destroying asteroids that are floating in space in order to use them to then power shield generators near orbiting planets that have need of the defenses to prevent them from taking on damage and thereby losing civilians. And this is pretty much the primary loop you have. So as your ship is flying around, you have two control schemes. You have one where you use the left thumbstick to move the ship and the other as a twin stick shooter style. Or there's the quote unquote normal version where you control the ship and you just fire in the direction that the ship is facing. And that is the method that I intended to use and stuck with, because it says normal right there is how it's intended. I couldn't go away from that. So that was how I did that. So it starts you off, and usually the first solar cluster or space cluster you're in, there's very few enemies and the planets themselves aren't in any real particular danger. You go around against destroying asteroids with your primary weapon, getting either basically gas and gas and minerals. And once you get enough, you go up to the satellite near the planet you want to defend. You use those to boost up the planet's shields. And once you've either saved all the planets or, I guess, lost some, and there's no planets left to save, you'll get access to a jump system that lets you choose the next environment you want to go to. And each environment has a certain number of planets you need to rescue and generalized conditions that might make that area either better or worse to go to. I might say, for example, more resources are available here, or some more aggressive solar system, or I don't know. I don't know. I've just basically named a couple of things. I can't even think of a ton off the top of my head. There's not a ton of different conditions. But also, different solar systems have different fuel costs to get to them. So if you might be thinking to yourself, well, I'll just hoard a bunch of resources, at least until I reach my cap, and then carry those resources to the next solar system. Well, they designed it such you couldn't do that, because it costs, they say, 20 to 30% of your resources to travel to a new location. And of course, by being percentage-based, the more you stockpile, the more you have to spend to do it. So, woof. Now, as you're doing this, occasionally enemy ships are going to appear. They're going to be jerks, and they're going to prevent you from accomplishing your mission. And if they're attacking a planet, the longer you allow large ships or systems to be present, the more people they'll end up killing on that planet, therefore hurting your final output or score. So you have two choices. One, destroy the ships that are orbiting the planet as fast as you can in order to save the citizens, or just power the shields so that the enemy ships have nothing to destroy. And that choice will largely depend on if you have enough, you know, resources to just power the shield up immediately, or in some respects, how much ammo you have. Because ammo in this game can be considered pretty precious depending on how reckless you are with your bullets. Because there are enemy drops that will release ammo containers sometimes. And also, as is always that, it's not from asteroids. So, but if you're not careful, you can end up blowing through your ammo. And it's not just ammo for one gun, because there are multiple types of weapons you can acquire in this game. Occasionally, when you rescue a solar system or planet by filling up its shield generator with resources, it will release caches of items. And when you go up to these caches, they come in a few forms. There might be one that allows you to get a new weapon, like a new type of gun. And if you decide to get that gun, if you only have your starting weapon, then it becomes your sub-weapon, and you can switch between them freely. And there are four different types of ammo, so depending on what kind of gun you get, either A, you'll diversify your bullet usage, or you'll just double down on one. Hey, easy peasy decision making, right? But there's also, you know, passive abilities you can acquire, such as the ability to drop a missile every time you fire a bullet, or every time you lose, like, you use like 15 charge shots. Every time you use 15 shots, you might get a passive effect that kicks in, or, you know, a number of different things. And you just basically choose which one you want. They're, again, passive, so you don't overwrite anything. You just collect them as you go. But if you go to one of these pods and you don't like the options that are available to you, you can spend credits, another resource that you collect throughout the game, to re-roll the cache and choose again. Generally, I just kind of went with what I found and just got happy with it. But you might find yourself in a position where you might want to level up one of the passive abilities you've already got. So you might tell yourself, well, if I re-roll, maybe it'll show up and I can get level 2. But again, I really did that. I was like, screw it. I want what I got. Just keep moving. But you'll pretty much be doing that throughout the entirety of the game. You know, rescuing planets, destroying enemy ships, destroying meteors that you find floating in space to get the resources to rescue the energy units. Sometimes destroying ships, but also potentially being careful not to burn through your ammo. And, I don't know, moving on to the next solar system, hopefully to the best. As you die, you get points that are based off of your overall performance that go towards a level up system that when you reach different levels, you'll unlock new things such as ship color schemas, increased fire rates, increased, I guess, like resource hold storage capacity, things like that. But also, you can unlock new ships. The ships, I'm not sure if they ever come from the unlock tree, but I also know sometimes you'll be flying out in space and you might find a ship that's like just like shipwrecked out in space. And if you spend the resources on that ship, it will become flyable and you can switch to it right then and there. And it may also unlock it in the actual, you know, hangar bay as well. But the primary way to unlock stuff, from what I could tell, is going to be the unlock system through the leveling up. But there's also like an unlock tree in the main menu that will show you a few things too, such as, I don't know, like, if you go, basically, you find an unlock, you basically find the ship, it unlocks the ship. If you find a specific, like, you know, basically power charge to unlock another thing, you get things like reverse deficiencies. There's a bunch of different unlocks in this game. But ultimately, it is a fun game to play, I think. The main gripes I have about it, though, are that it starts to feel rather samey very fast. But the game itself isn't that a ton expensive. So that's actually helpful in that regard, but it does start to feel a bit samey very quickly. Once you've done like two or three solar systems, you feel like you've done every solar system, really.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to play to the point where you feel like you've beaten it, though, therein lies your charge, your time, and your challenge. So, I mean, sometimes I do want to play a game until I see it all the way through, regardless of, you know, the repeated aspect of, I mean, like Defender, I played Defender a lot. I didn't care about the fact that I saw the same ships every time. I wanted to beat the same ships. So, and also, sometimes it's nice to be driven to unlock more stuff, too. I like games that give me a little bit of an incentive to press forward. It's pretty fun in that regard. And the music is pretty atmospheric. I do enjoy listening to the, you know, the audio as I fly around space. And I do feel like they did a pretty good job with the jump warp drive effect when you go between, like, warp points in the solar system that you're in, because even though I mentioned that you can jump from area to area. Once you've cleared it, the game is also set up so that you find warp or jump points where you can get to one, select the next one you want to go to. It'll just like blast you across the map. And it doesn't just warp you there. Your ship actually propels across space in a pretty cool animation as it happens. I guess if there was one thing I wish the developer could change, if there's an update, he might be hearing this, and, or they might be hearing this and go, screw you, buddy. But ammo is very limited in this game. And it includes when you're trying to shoot these little minuscule, tiny-ass droids after you've broken up a giant one because you want to get those resources, and then you just miss. You're like, well, damn it, that just screwed up me right there. But more so, there is the occasion where I'll see what I think is an asteroid that I can shoot floating out in space, and then I'll fly up to it, and it just fades into the background. And I'm like, wait a minute, that wasn't even a meter that I could actually shoot. It's just there as an aesthetic. I don't know. Like, I, if there was anything that could be done about that, I would like, just remove them or just make them more deeper into the background so it's pretty obvious you can't shoot them. That would be awesome. But flying up to one, preparing to shoot it, and then just seeing it fade away, it's like, no! I was ready to blow that thing up. So... But other than that, I mean, like, and also like maybe a little bit more enemy variety. But other than that, I think the game is fine. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's not going to win any medals or anything, but it's also going to get some fun factor out of me for a bit. So that sometimes is enough.
Yeah. Well, it clocks in at $11.99. What are your thoughts on Power of 10?
I think the Power of 10 is the power of try it for me.
They call it the Power of $11.99.
Yep. Next time, you got to keep that in mind.
Power of 12.
The power of 12 compels you.
All right. Next game. Do this. Jim Biori, The Onin War, developed and published by LGS Productions, released back in September on the PS4 for $14.99. The deluxe edition adds Ashigaru, The Last Shogun, for $19.99. The director's cut adds Tai Shogun, The Rise of the Emperor, for $24.99. And the ultimate edition adds Shadow the Ronin, Revenge to Samurai, for $29.99. So for an extra $5, you could get an additional game of each, like, they just stack. So you're getting four games for $30. Set in the feudal Japan during the late 16th century, the story follows the rise and fall of Hideyoshi, a man consumed by his hunger for power and the tragic consequences that ensue. Chris, what is going on in Jim Bayori, The Onin War?
Okay, so, and by the way, I played this on PS5. I don't know if PS5 was mentioned, but, anyways, so yeah, Jim Bayori.
There's a PS5 native, like a specific enhanced PS5 version. It's just the PS4 version running on PS5.
One would really have to like break one's fingers in half to make the emphatic air quotes around the word improved or enhanced. But so this is the return of our favorite developer, Gilson B. Pontes. This is a Pontes ML podcast special here.
Pontes.
Oh,
yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the this is his latest and dare I say greatest. So yeah, let's roll back that story again. There was like what, four sentences to the story, and
set in feudal Japan during the late 16th century, the story follows the rise and fall of Hideyoshi, a man consumed by his hunger for power and the tragic consequences that ensue.
Okay, I'm gonna hit pause right there, and I may just let the VCR stop at that point, but so it mentions Hideyoshi, and it also mentions Admiral Yi Sun Sin. Neither of those people are in this video game. As this is a Gilson B. Pontes game, there is no story or text or anything. Well, there's a little bit of text. We'll get to that in a second. But you actually play as a seemingly anonymous, just a ninja lady. I would say, I forgot the word for it, Kuniatochi or something like that.
Kunoichi,
thank you. But yeah, it's more like it's a lady that's dressed up in like a typical male ninja outfit. So it's, you know, not quite that. But anyways, either way, it's just something that was probably dragged and dropped from like, Unity or whatever. But yeah, this one's an interesting one. So the game starts off, as they all do, with walking down a long hallway towards the first, I guess, level. You're not quite in a hub, it's just a tunnel. It's just a, you're walking across a bridge. The wind is blowing really hard because that looks kind of cool, like going through the trees and stuff. And although it's only the trees that are reacting to the wind, like your actual, like, you know, your clothes and stuff don't, like, react to it or anything, or, like, you know, there's nothing else that reacts to the wind, but it's blowing through the trees and blowing out of your TV speakers while all the sound effects come out of the controller. We've heard this before. So, yeah, you're walking down a hallway towards the first quote-unquote level. However, there's something a little different about this one versus, you know, a Shadow to the Ronin or, you know, whatever the other ones are called. They're very hard to follow. what's one of the other ones? I think...
Shogun and Ashigaru.
Yeah, I reviewed one of those before. Anyways, so here's something that's a little bit different. Everything's pretty much in black and white, and it's also at a Dutch angle, which is, if you don't know that, that's a filmmaking thing popular in noir films, where when usually when a bad guy is talking or something sinister is happening, suddenly the camera angle will be tilted at about a 30 to 40 degree angle. This is to evoke, like I said, sinister happenings and stuff like that. It's an old filmmaking technique, usually from the black and white kind of films, which, you know, makes sense that this is not in color or anything. So I was like, okay, so they're doing Dutch angles and they're doing black and white. I mean, it definitely looks like they want to make like a game where every screenshot's going to kind of look artsy, you know, and like filtered and stuff and like angled already. The problem is you get into the first level and start playing the game and it doesn't stop. It's always black and white and it's always at a tilted angle. The entire game is tilted about 40 degrees. So, you know, that's your mileage may vary on whether you like that or not, but this is one of the very few games that made me physically ill, and not for the normal reasons that one of these games would. So, yeah, but once you get into it, it all suddenly really clicks into place, and you realize you've been, like, reviewing these games for, like, five gosh darn years now. And basically what it is you get into this big old world. It's mostly empty, almost entirely empty, I would say. And the wind's blowing, like I said, the trees are brushing back and forth in that way that kind of looks cool at 60 frames a second. You can ride a horse, or you can just hoof it with your own bare feet, no sandals or anything like that. No, you know, I'm pretty sure ninjas wore shoe-like implements on their feet, but this character's totally barefoot. And you run towards an enemy that you can then kill in one hit or be killed in one hit. Sad to say that our Kunoichi does not go whenever she dies. She just silently falls over, and then what happens is, there we go. That's the ninja dying sound from Shadow the Ronin, the Revenge to the Samurai or something. So yeah, you fall over dead, and then you end up in a different hub, going to a different place, and then you start a different level. And it doesn't matter because it's all the same thing. It's all the same backgrounds. It's the same, like, you know, just trees and the occasional building. The difference with this one is that there are like, you know, models of like skeletons with hats on. That's all the only way I can describe them. They're skeletons with hats on. They appear as regular enemies, but when you first start the game, and this is actually in the screenshot for the title of the game, sometimes the skeletons are Godzilla sized. They're about 150 feet tall. They're still moving at 60 frames a second or whatever, so they're just moving like normal. So it just looks like somebody just made a skeleton that's too big in their video game and it's just walking around. It kind of walks like a little ways and then disappears off the map. I don't know if it ever comes back.
Happened?
Huh?
Do you think that's what happened? Do you no, think that they just made it incorrectly?
I don't think so, because they're talking about it happens with like more than one thing. So there's also a guy who just stands, and he's 150 feet tall, and it, I guess it's supposed to look like a statue, but it just looks like a guy. It's just a guy with one of the swords, and he just stands there, and like around his feet is one of the landmarks, I guess. But I guess it was intentional, but it's not well done. It's like, if you're going to try and make something big, you got to make it move slower, because that's just the way it works. That's the way to convey the kind of scale that you're wanting to like do.
Immense size, like Shadow of the Colossus. Everything slows, like very.
Yeah. And I was excited about the prospect of fighting a 150 foot skeleton with a hat. I mean, that sounds great, but you don't fight him. He's just in the background and he disappears. It's just there for the screenshot. So what you do fight is, again, the normal size skeletons and the normal size man. And the game does that thing where it makes you travel like 700 to 800 meters to meet even one enemy. That's a lot of running. I actually looked this up. That's about 7 to 8 football fields of of running to get to the thing that you're either going to kill in one hit or it will kill you in one hit. Either way, you're going to be running another 800 meters before you see the next thing. And here's the thing about it. Once again, the controls are just like confusing. There's no options to change anything. Y-axis is not inverted, and there's no way to change that. Here's the thing. If you want your... Despite the fact that only two buttons are really used, there's no roll button in this one like there have been in some Gilson games. This one only has an overhead slash that's kind of fast and an overhead slash that's kind of slow. Since you defeat enemies in one hit anyway, I don't get the benefit of having a slower slash, but I don't know, maybe it's something. But here's the thing, to run, instead of using any one of the other buttons, you have to click in the left stick to run. And when you're on foot, when you're on barefoot, you click the left stick to toggle running while you're moving. You can't just turn it on and then start running. You have to be running, and then you click it in, and then you run faster, and then, you know, get to where you're going, usually straight up a hill with nothing really stopping you. But if you're riding your horse, you have to hold down the stick. You have to click in the stick and hold it, like, in a way that hurts while you're moving with the same stick to make your horse run. So there's no reason to ever get on your horse. You just, it hurts. Like, jeez. You have to click in the left stick and hold it. Like, that's ridiculous. I played, I just recently completed a game of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I put 96 hours plus into it in the first 2 weeks of its release to beat it. And half an hour of Jim Bowery made my hand hurt worse than that.
Oh, jeez. So,
and probably put more wear on my PS5 controller, which those things are not cheap, by the way. That's what that is. Like I said, it's just running way too much to do one thing and then the other. There's an even weirder slant to this one. Is that the game does have text and it does tell you what to do. These games have never told you what to do before. It comes up in English and Japanese that you need to get to something like defeat the enemy and rescue the villagers or something like that, or rescue the hostages. It's something standard like that. So you defeat a guy next to some houses, and then your next marker is to go into one of the houses, and then there's like a bald guy with no shirt on who's just standing there, and then you walk up to him and he starts coughing really loudly out of your controller speaker and then dies and then sinks halfway into the floor because there's no collision detection, and that's it. And then you just move on to go kill the next guy with your sword. And in two different levels that I played through, this happened the same way. It's just you walk up to the guy, he coughs loudly, dies, sinks into the floor, and then that's it. No explanation, no... You can't, like, hit him, you can't talk to him, none of the buttons do anything. It's just you walk up to him, and then your controller starts coughing. So, and by the way, no matter how much distance you put between yourself and that guy, the volume coming out of your controller is the same. So it is that the guy is killing your controller. That's the only way that can work. So yeah, I Gilson B. Pontes is pretty infamous, but I've never played a game of his that was so bad that it made me physically ill and hurt and killed my PlayStation 5 controller multiple times. That's Jeez. That's a new one.
Well, the game clocks in at $15. What are your thoughts on this one?
I mean, look, it's on, I think it's actually on sale right now. The standard edition's like, what, 50% off? And then it had a further sale from that, what I was looking at earlier. I think that's actually expired now. I mean, look, these games, I guess the thing I can say about this one is that you can do something. That's a high watermark for a Gilson B. Pontes game, is that you actually can get in there, have a goal stated to you, and you can, I suppose, work towards that goal. That's not nothing. That's something. But it's not enough to recommend this game. I think that if you have an extra $3, you should load up your Switch and pick up the game Restaurant Health Inspection Simulator Sanitary Service, which just came out today for $3. I don't know if it's any good or not, but it looks like you can play it. And that would be great. I would recommend not poisoning your Final Fantasy machine with something like this. But
Gold beans.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Next up, Stalker Legends of the Zone Trilogy. More specifically, Stalker Call of Pripyat, developed and published by GSC Game World. The three titles released March 6th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99 each, or $39.99 for the trilogy. A military expedition at the center of the zone has mysteriously disappeared. Your task as a special service operative in the final part of the trilogy is to figure out the reason behind the disappearance and determine the status of the personnel. This edition has been recalibrated for a journey on console. Aki, what are your thoughts on the third game in the trilogy and the trilogy as a whole?
Well, Jeff, it's good. There you go. For more in depth, you play as a basically a secret super soldier who's totally hidden and no one knows who you are. And you have this super secret thing that you need to do. A bunch of helicopters went into the heart of the no-no zone. And now you have to go find them because none of them ever fucking return. You need to figure out what happened to the helicopters, what happened to the people, what happened to what they were trying to do, and come and report back. And for this, you, Mr. Super Secret Agent, are pretending to be a stalker. And one of the first things you ask is basic information about the zone to the first group of people you walk across, because you are totally a stalker and totally. Like, one of your first things is, do you know anyone who might have any work for me possibly at all? Instead of being like every traitor known to man in the history of ever that's been here for like the past 20 fucking years or anything that have been in every single game, because they've been here since damn near the start. Yet, no, you're totally a stalker. You don't know these people because you're just so amazing. it's bad on that aspect. But thankfully, you immediately start off knowing where, having a map that has some areas already listed on it, which is fantastic. Five helicopter locations are already on the map for you, so you can already just get feet to the pavement, you know, just start going at it. You're going to die doing that very severely many, many, many times, but you can try it. This game is significantly harder than the other ones, because all the late game enemies basically were in this area. Guess what's still in this area? All the shit that's going to wreck everything. Like, one of the first groups of enemies I came across was a monster that was humanoid that fucking turned invisible and then ran at me and slashed me, and would appear right before they hit me, then immediately run behind me as I was turning around and just fucking appeared again. And they kept doing that until I died.
GG.
That's the level of this game. And And you just be like, if you're worried, oh no, it's so hard, and you only start off with the pistol and knife like always. No, this time you also start off with one of the mid-game really good weapons that everyone loves, the AK-47. It's a shame that that isn't going to save you, but it's fun. so yeah, this game's significantly more deadly. You get wrapped into a lot of other side plots, kind of like always, that really have basically a bunch of bandits really gunning for you. And you get to choose between these two groups, the freedom group or the duty group. And you have to choose which one you're going to side with, because the other group's going to fucking hate you. Or I guess you can just choose not to side with either of them, but that tends to make the games much harder. So thankfully, you don't have a ton of factions like you did in Clear Skies, and it's not like 50 billion different individuals like Shadow over Chernobyl was. This is just two groups, and life is so much better. That doesn't tell you how either group views you or anything, and you can see how well regarded you are in general. So you kind of have to just know which side's which, which you do get a handle on eventually. And yeah, so you're going through a much tougher area with slightly better gear than the usual start. I would suggest playing this on the easier difficulties at first, so you know what the hell you're walking into, because it's going to wreck your shit. Most of the other two, I would totally suggest just start on the hardest difficulty. It's not that bad. It's fine. This one, you're going to die so fast if you don't know what you're doing.
Nice.
So yeah. There's been some upgrades with the UI in this one. When you open your inventory, it just looks a lot cleaner. It's still basically the same thing, but it looks better. Your map, I think, is slightly better. You still can't just place markers where you want. And when you get hints, you can't place markers where those are like you used to be able to. So I don't understand why they took that away. But you can still access, like, oh, here's all these missions I have, BM side or main ones. We can click to track that, and it'll basically point an arrow on the map telling me you need to go this direction until you get close enough that it appears on the map. So that's still there, so that's nice. That can actually be hidden away, which is also nice, so you can see more of the mini map when you've brought up the actual map. And yeah, it is still hard as balls.
So it's harder than the other two. Let's talk price. We kind of went over these last week, and you were of the mind that the first two were good enough. You might as well just buy the trilogy because you're basically mm-hmm. getting the third game free. Does it stand on its own as a $20 game? Should you buy it as a $20 game, or should you just get this trilogy and get everything?
This one, the other two you can play as you want. It doesn't matter. You can just play one of them or both of them. It doesn't really matter, because Clear Skies is a prequel, and it continues up till around the end of the first game. And the first game starts partway through Clear Skies and goes to the, obviously, end of the first game. This game is set immediately after that, so you kind of need to play at least one of them to have any idea of really what's going on, because all three of these games are connected to each other.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about this series is, this series, there is a main character. There is one specific person that everything is based on. In most of these games, you do not play as that character. So you kind of have to understand what's going on to really get this game. So you really need to play at least one of them. I would suggest both of them before doing this. So I wouldn't buy this and play it solo at all. I still think it is worth the $20. But since the other two are also 20 and there's a $40 pack, just go that route. That,
yeah,
it saves you some money. And you really don't want to play this one as just the only one you play. One, it's going to wreck your shit until you're not going to understand all of the main important people or what's really going on with the world.
Does it have you excited for Stalker 2 coming in later this year?
Oh, so much. Oh, yes. Yes, so much. I don't think Stalker 2 is going to be set after, or like as a direct sequel to these games. I think it's set a little further into the future as a completely different group of people, just based on how these games go. So, yeah, I'm super excited. because I'm really with how long it's been between these games and what's about to come out, I can't wait to see just how much better the gun mechanics are. Because now the shooting should be, if you aim down sights and you fire, it's going to hit wherever the fuck you're aiming, is what I'm hoping for the new game. These games don't do this, don't do that. It's wherever in this reticule, whether you're aiming down sights or not, that reticule is where it's going to hit, somewhere in there. And that's a big difference the further out you get. Whereas the new game, I don't expect that to be the case, just because of how much of a distance there are between
gameplay.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm super excited for it, and it's going to kick the shit out of me then too. And I can't fucking wait.
Well, hopefully we get a chance to check that one out when the release is near. But for now, we've got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Parry Nightmare, developed by Kakaku Games. Oh, wow. Published by Phoenix Inc., released March 21st on Steam for $6.99. This is a game in which a girl is trapped in a nightmare, cooperates with her other self, Hano-chan, to defeat the nightmare. In this parry and buddy action game, players parry the attacks of countless enemies, accumulate gauges, and wipe them out. For now, what is going on in Parry Nightmare?
So, Parry Nightmare is I was reading about it on the Steam page, and he referred to it as like a parry plus buddy, like buddy game. And I don't know what to make of that, but I guess maybe you will after I describe how the game plays. The premise here is that you are a young girl who is being haunted by various forms of her own trauma, and they have resulted in her being kind of locked in a sort of nightmare state where she is unable to wake up from sleeping, and you, as the player, control her soul. Her soul has formed a bond with a character who was introduced to you as Hano-chan, and you collectively work together to get her to wake up in the morning by playing through a series of nightmare-themed stages. At the beginning of every level, you are a small wisp of a soul. You can move around the stage, but it's pitch black, so you're not going to see much. And occasionally, you'll start to see enemies walk up to you. When an enemy gets close enough, you will have a blue circle illuminate around your character. At this point, you can press the A button or so, and but the game considers to be a parry. But essentially, you're basically saying, you're too close, get back. That's what it pretty much amounts to. And when that happens, the enemies get knocked back and knocked onto the ground. At this point, Hano, who's running around with you, will attack the downed enemies, eventually killing them, allowing you to pick up the essence they leave behind. Your ultimate goal on each level is to get the overall value of 100 of these things to escape the dream. So it's not saying pick up 100 of them so much as for every certain number of them, you'll go up one level, and you want to get 100 of those levels to increase to get out. As you'll progress, as you get more and more of these things, the level will start to get more and more bright and illuminated, and you'll be able to see more of your surroundings. And of course, being that this is sort of like a bullet hell or enemy hell type game, as you get further through the level, enemies will start to come out in more and more mass, like to the point where it's almost ridiculous. You will never get any other types of attacks as the soul. Your main thing is to parry enemies back. Though occasionally you will max out a bar, which you can then press the B button to just like do a super attack where it blows many enemies back. And if there happens to be souls, essences lying around the map you didn't pick up, it'll suck them all towards you. So it's a good way to pull that off too. But every once in a while, even though you don't get any new attacks, Hano does. So what happens is every once in a while you'll come across an enemy that when you destroy it, it'll drop drop two items. And you get to choose which one you want. One is usually sushi, which I think just gives you some health back, or rather gives you some charge back. But occasionally you'll get something else, like some bento, like some curry or some vegetables. And if you eat those things, Hana will take on a different form. And that form changes the way she wipes out downed enemies. And depending on which ones you get, it can be very beneficial to you, the player, because, for example, if she eats curry, she becomes like Fire Hano, and she just runs around, barfing fire like a dragon, which means she wipes things out far faster than a little pew-pew beam that she generally runs with before it gets leveled up. Again, as the levels progress, enemies become more, the levels become more packed with enemies, and it becomes harder to do the proper parries. Once you get 100, though, the level's over and you wake up. The game will also give you a final score, including some bonuses based on if you never allow yourself to get hit, or if you... Oh, one more thing to describe about the gameplay, but what relates to this bonus I'm going to mention, Hanno getting knocked down, as in never letting that happen on the stage. What do I mean by that? Well, generally, enemies are coming after you, the soul. But every once in a while, you hear an alarm that goes, brip, 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 and at that point, it's indicating that a bomb monster is running onto the scene from somewhere on the side of the map. And unlike those and the other enemies, it is targeting Hanno herself. And if it hits her, she gets knocked down. And until you walk over to her and stand over her long enough to get her off the ground, you are unable to kill any monsters. So you have to rescue her if you allow her to get hit with a bomb. But if you manage to not let her get hit with a bomb, you'll get an in-stage bonus. So that's cool, too.
Hey.
And that also ends up being pretty nice. So at the end of a level, you go back to the bedroom scene. And this is probably the part of the game I'm not too fond of, though I get that it's there to, you know, kind of give you more character information on the character that you are portraying, whose soul you're portraying. But you'll scroll around the room looking for various things that can be selected with the A button. And when you select them, you'll get a little bit of a blurb, whether it be the main character describing that thing and how it relates to her life, or Hanno commenting on it as well. Eventually, you'll come across something that reminds you of a trauma. And once that happens, you'll be blasted back into the next... You'll be able to select Hanna's mind, or sorry, the main character's mind, and choose the next nightmare to go into. Or you can go back to an old nightmare and try again on that one. I do wish you could just select an old nightmare without having to find the nightmare that's going to, the trauma that's going to trigger the new nightmare, but that's just a design choice they went with. But once you go to the new nightmare, you'll do another stage, and so on and so forth. Now, after the first level, you'll eventually start coming across, you know, boss nightmares. Boss nightmares are different monsters. Basically, they're stronger. Sometimes they're way larger than other enemies. Sometimes they're just, you know, tougher or faster or whatever. But unlike the other nightmares, you can't just parry them away. You can only make them drop their guard by using the super explosion attack that you use with B to then take their shields down, at which point you can then destroy them. But the reward for destroying them is a lot more soul essence than normal enemies give you, so it's kind of nice to take them out. I do feel like this game is a lot of fun. Like, the gameplay is funny. The gameplay in this is very much, once you've seen one level, you've seen the gameplay of every level. But it's fun gameplay. Like, it's something really weird about how enjoyable it is just to, like, let guys, enemies come close and then smash them back and then let the your buddy character just wipe them out. It's enjoyable to just do that over and over again. And it also helps that the OST for this game is an absolute bop.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good about the soundtrack.
I saw somebody make a reference to this online. I'm not sure how true it is, but they... Let me see here. Give me a second. They said it was done by Osamu Kubota. And apparently, if that is true, it would explain a lot about why the music in this game is really good. Because this guy was one of the earlier members of the Bimani sound teams, or the Konami sound team for Bimani games. So he's done a number of tracks that are good tracks, from like Pop Music or Keyboard Mania or Beat Mania. So it makes sense as to why the OST of this game is really good. And it is really good. So I could recommend this game for the music alone. But the gameplay itself is enjoyable too. Like I said, if anything, the only downside is having to look through the bedroom to find the next trauma instead of just being like, I want to go to the next stage. But hey, you gotta give it where you can get it. And some people might actually enjoy that aspect of the game because it does add a bit more character to the main character. And some of her traumas may even be relatable to people that are playing the game. So in regard, commiseration is never wrong. But I think this game surprised me. In fact, they even did a little bit better, because I remember when we first got the code, it was like maybe a month or so ago. And the translation that they had at the time was very bad. But I guess they recently patched it, or they patched it in the last few weeks or last week or so, because the translation now is a lot better. I read text and I'm like, what the heck is going on? Because it was running off the screen and everything. But now everything seemed to measure up well. Translation is good. The text doesn't run off the screen.
And hey, the joys of pre-release gameplay.
Mm-hmm. But it's good that they at least fixed it. So, because yeah. I hate when a game like that comes through, they don't fix it. Now I got to talk about how bad the text is. But I can at least say this one has a happy ending in that regard.
Very good. But the game clocks in at $6.99. What are your thoughts on it at that price?
I kind of want to say, fuck it, why not? But I think it's genuinely fun, too. Like, I would recommend buying it to actually play it and not just to throw your money away. So, no, this is a good game, and I think it deserves a solid buy it recommendation. And I hope you enjoy it.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right. Well, that is good.
That's why I said buy it.
Well, hopefully people bought it, and hopefully people bought all the games this episode, because they've all been fantastic games.
That is a lie.
This
you
episode,
know
it has been winner after winner
Lies.
After winner.
Don't
God
you
bless us, everyone.
Smirch this show. Don't you besmirch our honor with that ill statement. There were some turds here tonight. At least one. You can take a guess.
Don't talk about Stalker that way. They tried their best.
They did try their best. Okay, two turds.
Oh, I will get angry. Do not.
Music this episode.
Whatever was on last episode.
All right, more Metroid Metal. Sounds good to me. That's easy enough.
I was right, everyone.
Big thanks to Bree for coming on for doing her thing. Big thanks to the three of you for being around doing yo things. Like Aki said, music is going to be Metroid Metal. Does anyone have any final words to end the only show this week? So for people who are expecting a Thursday show this week or over the weekend, nope, this is the only one. We'll see you next week. Any final words?
Any up-and-coming game designers out there, make sure to take a lesson from Chris's review. Do not design a game where you just walk down a corridor and then walk through a freaking monochrome wasteland only to get beat by your single-hit opponent over and over again.
At least don't make
Everyone
the entire
knows
game
that
Dutch
that's
angle.
A bad game. He knows that's a bad game. He doesn't care.
Hey, maybe he does, but somebody out there could be listening and going, if Gilza can do it, I can do it. And I'll do it the same way he did it, because it gives me money. Just make a game that doesn't suck.
Don't let your dreams be dreams, kids.